Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
And we really are ready for an exciting journey down the river today. Jeannie, how are you doing? This is Maxine.
Hi, Maxine. I'm doing great, and I keep watching the hurricane and the storm warnings on TV, and I'm glad our river's not in that path. I keep praying for those people.
Yeah, we've got some relatives that live back in that zone where that big storm is supposed to hit, and I pray they're safe, and as well as all the other people that live in that area, that see a lot of damage from this bad, bad storm. And what did you do with your weekend? Did you get something done this weekend?
No, I didn't. You shouldn't have asked me that. I really did not. But I enjoyed my weekend. I just relaxed. Yeah.
I got some canning done, a little bit of canning with my daughter, and it was a lot
of
fun.
Wow, what'd you can?
Applesauce with cinnamon. And then we found a new recipe for peach butter, which incorporated some elderberry liqueur into the peaches. And it
turned out
to have a marvelous flavor. Anyway, maybe you can
I like to make those butters in the crock pot so that the smell fills my house for about 3 days. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. And
well, Jeannie, let's go ahead and jump into our program because we've got a very interesting guest today. We're going to be talking about the hot buttons that affect your teenagers. And our guest today is Nicole Odell. She's a youth culture expert. She resides in Paxton, Illinois with her husband and 6 children, the youngest of whom are toddler triplets. Now, that alone sends a chill up my spine, thinking of triplets running around in the toddler stages. She's the host of Choose Now Radio, Parent Talk, and Teen Talk, and the founder of Choose Now Ministries, dedicated to guiding teens through tough issues and helping parents encourage good decisions. As an author, Nicole writes both fiction and nonfiction. She's got 19 books out there. Her popular young adult fiction includes the Diamond Estate series and the Scenarios for Girls interactive books that feature alternate endings that allow young girls to decide the outcome for the main character. Now, that's interesting. I like that. Her nonfiction for teens includes Girl Talk, which she wrote with her 2 daughters. And while her young adult resources encourage and equip teens, Nicole also works to bridge the communication gap between teens and their parents. The Hot Button series helps parents discuss tough issues with their tweens and teens before the issues pop up in real life. In fact, the Hot Button series has been awarded the Focus on the Family seal of approval. So parents, listen in, grandparents, listen in, and teens. Nicole's got something for all of you out there. So welcome to our show, Nicole.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, we are excited. So would you tell our listeners what exactly is a hot button?
Well, it's any one of those issues that, I like how you said, sends a chill up your spine. It's any one of those things that, it could be different for each of us, for each of our families, when our teenagers, the issues they face, the questions they have that make us either shy away in fear or embarrassment, the things that can really affect their lives that they're pressured to do. That's what I'm talking about with these Hot Buttons books.
Hmm. Where'd you get the idea for those strategic scenarios?
It came up as kind of a game I play with my kids. And we could be sitting around and having dinner, and I would just say something like, so you're at a party and you're having a good time, and those kids, the ones you really want to be friends with, they hand you a beer. and they're watching you and waiting to see if you're going to drink it. And, you know, I set up the scenario in a way that if I had just said, so if you're offered a beer, are you going to take it? Their answer would be no. But if I put them in a situation where they say, ooh, I guess I could see why that would be so hard, staring that peer pressure right in the face and that temptation and the desire to fit in and be popular, putting it in that way, and then I'll give them four choices. So they don't have to come up with a yes or no answer. They just have to say A, B, C, or D. And then we talk about it. And I, in the books, I give 14 or 15, depending on the book, of those strategic scenarios about each of the hot button issues. Each one is each book is a different issue, and parents can use those the same way I did with my kids.
So Nicole, one of the things that interests me is the statistics that you've come up with on teen dating relationships. There's some pretty scary stuff going on today. Would you let our audience know about those statistics?
Well, it's just the biggest thing that we need to be aware of is how young our kids are getting involved in what they see as a serious relationship. And we have to sit up and take notice and realize that numbers are one thing, but when it comes to our kids and when we're letting our kids date at 12, which is common, it's so common, we're setting them up for decades of having their heart divided over and over and over. And if they're not marrying until, you know, mid-20s or later after college and after career gets going, you know, if they're not marrying till then, why do we want them to endure decades of relationships? And the statistics show that when they start dating earlier, the incidences of premarital sex before 18 it's doubled and tripled by each year earlier they start dating. So 16 was kind of the cutoff. If a teenager waits until 16 to date, it's around 80% more likely that they will be able to abstain from sex until they graduate from high school.
Wow. That's not even very long, just graduating from high school. I guess the thing that... The thing that my kids, when they were in high school, I don't know who said it to me, but one of them said, you know, the thing that I know is that somebody is going to get hurt if I date now. And it's fun. It feels like it would feel good.
Yeah.
But I'm really going to choose not to date till later because I don't want to be in that kind of a relationship and where either I'm hurt or I have to hurt somebody else. So
that is such a great way to look at it. And I would definitely, it's a wise young person to be able to see that. I think it's a harder thing for girls. And let's be honest, we were there. We drive this train. We are the ones who make these relationships happen. And the boys, they just kind of bob along, you know. It's on us. We want that approval and that acceptance and that connection so badly. And we know the boys, they're wired to want physical. So what happens is the girls want the connection, the boys want the physical, so the girls think to have that connection, they have to give up the physical, and we've just created a vicious cycle because once the boys have it, not to belittle them or berate them, but when they have that physical, they're wired at that age to the interest, it just turns off. It's not an evil thing, it's just what the male is in those teenage years. So we have this vicious cycle of unfulfillment and searching and reaching, and it can't end well at 12, 13, 14, 15 years old.
So what are some of the scenarios you would talk about in your Hot Buttons Dating Edition that would help these girls be strong and be able to say no and get the guys to respect their decisions?
Sure. Well, and these are also written for parents of teenage boys, so there are scenarios in there for that,
That's
too.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, what are you going to do? What's a boy going to do if a girl is pressuring? Christian men, young men, are up against, it's a tough world for them right now because the peer pressure is just as difficult in their direction as it is for the girls. So that's in there. Things like what happens if you're in a home with your date, with your boyfriend, and his parents leave, and you know you're not allowed to be there. What do you do? The idea is to create these scenarios and put them in your teenager's mind so when they come up, they're already prepared. instead of having to make those decisions and think clearly in the heat of the moment when the peer pressure's on. So we're just kind of paving the way, I guess would be, you know, the way to put it. Other things like you like this boy and he likes you, but you know your parents won't. Are you going to be honest with them about who he is and what they need to know about him? Maybe, you know, some best friend, boyfriend situations. Those things are so rampant in our schools, you know. And sexuality often comes first before the dating, but that's a different book. We have a sexuality book, too, which is a completely different topic.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in the third of this three-part series with you, Nicole.
Yeah. Hey, Nicole, do you give answers to the parents and kids, or do you just suggest ways they might go, or do you just allow parents and teenagers to come up with the answers together on their own as they work through the scenario?
Yeah. That's a good question. And the scenario is presented and the optional endings are presented. To most parents, it's going to be pretty clear what the right answer is. But I caution, in each of those scenarios, I caution the parents not to steer the answer and not to react. Don't be judgmental. You don't want your teenager to think that, you know, they're getting in trouble for having this conversation, because that defeats the whole purpose. So just to be accepting and embrace what's being said. And then I list discussion points and questions after each one, so it'll help the parents take the discussion farther and even point them back to different parts of the book where there are statistics and different things they can bring out to their teenager at that point.
So are you just saying don't be judgmental with the conversation, or are you telling the parents not to offer absolute truth kind of suggestions?
No, I'm just saying don't be judgmental with this conversation.
Let them talk. Good, yeah.
Yeah, let them talk. Let them have the floor. Let them explore this. You know, treat it as an opportunity to see how your teenager thinks and to open the doors. But, you know, if you act judgmental in this conversation, it's going to throw up walls.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that's quite wise that you're presenting it that way. And I love the scenarios you've put in this book. You've got checkpoints at the beginning of each chapter. Would you define the checkpoints, please?
They pertain to the chapter that just ended. So they're just recap.
Oh, they're finalizing the previous
one. Yeah. And the books are meant to be kind of a quick reference guide. They're about the size of a CD case, maybe a little thicker. And they're meant not necessarily to read straight through and go through all the scenarios at one time, but to pull them off the shelf as the need arises and flip them open and throw one out to your teenagers, your preteens especially, at the dinner table or when the opportunity arises.
And what another thing I really like is how you have brought in at the end kind of a study guide for the parent and the child to do together.
Yeah.
And that
one
seems
thing
kind
as
of important.
A teenager, yeah, when I was a teenager, I never felt forgiven. I always felt like I was carrying the baggage of everything I did, all my mistakes. I still feel that way in some ways with my parents. I still feel like I'm wearing the scars of the choices I made. And I really wanted to drive home the point that mistakes and choices is all part of our journey, and he who began a good work in our teenagers will be faithful to complete it, and we're on that journey with them. So I wanted to give the parents and the teenagers and preteens an opportunity to clear the slate, and it does that. It talks about forgiveness and confession. Confession first, then forgiveness, and then that clean slate. Moving forward, you know, with a pure relationship, not hinging on past mistakes and judgment errors.
That's really good. I think almost everybody struggles with that. And what a wonderful thing if these parents can listen to you and the kids can listen and they can start that way and they can do that. That's great. I love that.
Yeah. Good.
On page 78 of this book. These are not very large books, listeners, and they're very easy to read because they're kind of a half-size book, so it's real easy to read. But on 78, you've got a kind of a progression downward in a relationship. If you're one of those parents who assumes your teen won't go too far and you're doing nothing to prevent it from happening, then you're reading the right book, is what you start out saying. So the first step is the holding hands. Then you drop into hugging, into kissing, into French kissing, into extended making out, touching over clothes, groping under clothes, oral sex, and sexual intercourse. There's a progression, you say, that can't be undone. So how can you alert the parents to guard their children before it's too late?
Well, a big thing is communication, and I know we say that over and over, but I'm serious when I say really exposing and enlightening our kids to what they're going to experience. So what does it feel like when you hold hands with a boy for the first time? What stirrings, what kinds of emotions and physical desires, what happens to your body when you kiss? What happens? What takes over? Why does it become difficult? They need to understand that we know what they're dealing with. So when they're in those moments that it's difficult to get out of, we've all experienced that. When they experience that, they realize, oh, this is what she was talking about. Too many times we hide from that, and we just want to assume that it's not going to happen, they're not going to go there. And then our teenagers get in this situation, and they say, nobody has ever felt like this before. They didn't know what they were asking me to promise. This is, you know, this is special. And then they continue down that progression and think, they believe in that moment that they are unique and that relationship is above all the relationships in the world, and nobody ever felt that way. So we have to really let them know that, no, this is what it is. We've all been there. We felt that. And if they could have that moment of thought that my mom felt that way, you know, it might wake them up out of that.
I would have loved to know that long ago.
Yeah.
Do you think it actually helps if they know ahead of time? Do you think it actually makes a difference in their actions?
I do. It would have for me. And
okay.
I don't know that we have a whole lot of time to get into my story, but I went through some major changes and some horrible things happened in my early teen years, and I was kind of thrust into this peer pressure world and was not prepared for it. And I was spiraling. I felt myself just completely out of control, almost like my decisions were happening before I even knew they were there. And that preparation, I think, goes a long way. And that understanding that I'm not the center of the universe, that what's happening right now is not unique to me. And God knew, my parents know, and, I'm still called to that place. I'm not above.
So before we run out of too much more time, I want to talk about this violence in teen dating relationship. I think Jeannie and I were both surprised with the statistics that popped up on the violence in teen dating. Can you enlighten our audience about that?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what drives this and why. I think it's just that our teenagers are searching and they're empty, and we're in a faith crisis. Our teenagers are in a faith crisis of there's no black and white anymore. You know, we cry for tolerance and choice and you know, whoever your God is, and worship a God, whoever he or she might be. And they just have no clue where their importance is and what their identity is, and they're searching. And this violence, it's boy and girl. It's not just male violence on girls, and it's so common. I believe the statistic, if I can remember correctly, is 1 in 4 teenagers dating have experienced some kind of violence, and that number rises. And the earlier they start dating, the more years they have dating, the more opportunity they have to experience this. And then once it happens, they're stuck because they're ashamed and they feel trapped. And they also subconsciously, just like in a marriage or in an abuse situation with an adult or with a father, girls especially, they want to reconcile that relationship. They want to find that place of healing within that relationship, so they stay. And
what are some of the signs of this abuse taking place, Nicole?
Well, and what's sad about signs is if you read any of the lists of signs, it can all be the same, and it can all look a lot like what teenagers go through. Depression or mood swings and eating changes and style and dress changes and withdrawing from friends and hiding from family events and personality changes. And most parents will say, yeah, that sounds like my 15-year-old, you know, because our teenagers do go through hormonal shifts and style changes and all that. It's can be very normal. But I think any parent who's really got their finger on their teenager and is involved in their daily life and taking the time for a lot of communication, they're going to start to see those signs. And also opening that communication and asking those questions, don't wait until you're afraid. Mom and Dad, if you're listening, don't wait until you start to think, I wonder if something's going on. Ask on a regular basis. Has anyone touched you? Has anyone hurt you in any way? You've been on dates. Has anyone raised a hand to you? You can ask those questions, even if there are no signs. And what that does is it tells your teenager you're on the ball, you're watching, and you're there.
You know, I'm really glad that you mentioned the reverse of girls hitting guys. What would you think is the thing that a guy should do if a girl is hitting him? I mean, is it different than the way a girl should handle it?
Yeah, don't hit back.
Yeah,
and girls too, you know, get out of the situation and don't go back. As soon as you have the opportunity, get out of the situation and get to someone you can trust, a parent, a youth leader, a teacher, a guidance counselor, and report it. The longer you let it go unreported, the more often it happens, and those statistics just rise, and our teenagers get to where they're trapped. And parents, if you're aware of a situation, I knew of one when I was young. It was a friend of mine, and she was in an abusive dating relationship, and her parents didn't report it. And as far as I know, this boy's parents never found out. I think you should contact
the parents then and the authorities, right?
The parents and the authorities and the school, and whatever you can do as a parent or teens, if you're listening, whatever you can do to really make this event, make this situation aware of what's going on so they can help. Even if you're out of it, there are other people who are going to encounter the same thing. So this kind of behavior rarely changes. A person doesn't usually go from an abuser to, you know, there's a reason that a person's behaving that way, so they need help before they can't heal themselves from it.
Nicole, how can people get a hold of your books and how can they find you? Because you've also got a couple radio programs that are pretty important for parents and teens to listen to.
Yeah, everything that I do is at NicoleOdell.com. There's also HotButtonSite.com. And if you like the sound of those strategic scenarios, you can go to HotButtonSite.com. And I have a bunch of them. I post them there every week or so, a free one. It's just there for you to use, the same type of thing that I put in the book. So you can try it out right now. Dinner time, pull it up on your cell phone and throw it out there to your kids and see how it goes, see how the conversation transpires. Just by throwing it out there, it's a perfect opportunity for you. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff, and also my radio shows, choosenowradio.com, Parent Talk and Teen Talk.
You are just full of resources for parents and for teens, and that's really quite exciting to me. So one other thing I wanted to get into a little bit was what do you do with the teens get involved in dating and it turns physical really fast. How can things be stopped quickly when a girl gets caught, we could say a guy too, but when a young girl gets caught in the mix of peers and such like that, what can she do? What kind of things might be important at that point?
Are we talking about a girl who's already had sex?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Well, anywhere you are, and I wanted to bring this out earlier, and I'm glad you mentioned it, but when we talked about that downward progression of, you know, the steps that the physical takes, we want to really make sure that nobody feels defeated or hopeless, because I was date raped when I was 15, and that's what sent me on this. I just gave up. I just said, well, this was robbed from me, and why should I bother, and I might as well, you know, throw everything away, it doesn't matter. And I just went into this depression and this feeling like I was hopeless. There was nothing I could do. I just want to make sure that our teenagers know that wherever they are on that progression, even if they've already had sex, our God is a redeeming God, and He will restore what you know, in our hearts and in our minds. And yes, some physical things are permanent, and we can't erase the past, but His grace and His mercy is sufficient to cover all those bad choices and wherever we are. So if you are on that road, if a teenager is on that road and they're regretful and they want to get off that path, it's time to just step off. You know, we could give a whole list of things they can do, you know, go to your room and lock the door and don't make phone calls and turn off your cell phone and get off the internet. But the fact is, it's just a choice you have to make, and you can partner with God to do that. And pray, ask for the Holy Spirit to convict you in those moments when it becomes difficult, and to offer you a way out. And He will provide a way out if you want it.
What I'm finding today is so many young people are getting caught up in these parties where there's a lot of alcohol available. And
yeah.
And they start doing things because their inhibitions are loosened that they wouldn't
Definitely.
Do otherwise, and they get themselves caught in terrible messes. So what kind of things can a teen do or a parent do when a child goes out to a party? How can we set up a safer party environment for our children?
Well, the first thing is have them ourselves, have everybody over. My daughter is known for her legendary bonfires. They say, when are you having another legendary bonfire?
I like that.
Yeah,
and you're not tied
something.
In the middle of it.
No, and I don't hover. I'm not a helicopter
yeah.
parent, but I do know they're there on my property at my home, and I have control over what's going on. So
yeah,
it's the number one choice to me is to have them there. Number two is contact the parents where the party's going to be. Make sure they are committed and will commit to you that they'll be home and there won't be alcohol. And if you find out that they aren't going to be home, you've got a trust issue with your teenager now. Mm-hmm. And you need to address that. You need to really let your kids know that you're holding them accountable for that. If you require that the parents be home if they go to another home and you find out that that wasn't the case, you need to hold them accountable and offer them a way out, that any time there is a change in circumstances where the parents leave or alcohol shows up or worse, you know, drugs show up or people are doing things they know is wrong, that they can call you at any time. I've had my daughter call me at a sleepover because they were going to watch a movie and she didn't think I'd approve, and she called to ask. And it was one that I didn't approve of. It was horrible. It was a horrible one. I couldn't even believe it. And
yeah.
she told them she couldn't watch it. And she said I offered to come pick her up if they wanted to watch the movie, but they chose to watch something else. And she was fine with that. And that just goes for hours and hours and hours of conversations we've had about these choices, and that she knew it was safe to call.
Excellent wisdom on all of that. Jeannie, do you have one more question before we have to close this program today?
Well, you know, I don't have a question. I have a comment, and that is, when you've had those hours of conversation and you've put in the work and you've prayed and you've asked God for guidance, and then your daughter does something like that, it's a great feeling, isn't it? And
yeah,
all the
it
parents
is.
Out
it
there.
Really is.
Yeah.
It really is. And one of my favorite things is when she comes, or they, any one of them, comes and says, exactly how you said it was going to happen, that's how it happened. Because when that happens over and over, it starts to build that trust where they say, you know what, Mom isn't totally clueless. And I think when we are honest with them and expose ourselves and our own weaknesses and get vulnerable with them, they really begin to trust us.
Yeah.
Nicole, thank you so much for getting vulnerable with us today. We really appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you.
Well,
you have
thank
been an excellent
you. It's been
guest.
Great.
And
oh,
listeners,
thank you.
Remember,
that.
This is the first of a 3-part series. We will have Nicole back with us next Monday. She will be talking about the hot buttons for the Internet, and that's another really hot topic. So God bless you, and we look forward to all of you tuning into our program next week. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at the river. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.